The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We are delighted to be with you on this eve of Independence Day. I'm Hugh Hallman. That's Lewis Hallman. He is just finished an expose, I think, on how the Chinese government is greatly at risk in the new universe compared to the United States. From that, we want to talk about the fact that there are consequences to what's been going on. We've had a government, both at the federal and at the state levels, telling us what we have to do. And as we've given our governments lots of leeway to help solve problems in an uncertain time, we didn't know exactly what was going to go on with this coronavirus. We didn't know what SARS-CoV-2 might do to us, what the ultimate disease coming from that now called COVID-19 would mean. And in the early days, we gave our government a lot of leeway to help guide us through what was an uncertain crisis. But as time has gone on, the United States has done what it typically does. The U.S. citizens have put their muscle into something to try to solve problems. People did all kinds of charitable activities, making masks, helping neighbors. The government said, we've got to go into our homes and stay there because this disease was, as recently said as 2 weeks ago, 10 times more dangerous than flu. And then there have been skeptics like me and Lewis saying, how can you say that? You need to know how many people have the virus and how many people have died. Well, we know how many people die. We rarely miss counting somebody who dies. But we have yet failed to count how many people have the virus. There have only been 3 studies done of a random sense to find out how many people might have the virus. It was done in Santa Clara County, California, out of Stanford, another test by the same folks in LA County, and then ultimately in New York State. And all 3 of those tests came up with a very similar conclusion.
The conclusion that they came up with was that the amount of COVID cases that are extant in the population, the amount of actual virus out there.
He likes to use fancy words, extant, that are out there and exist.
Right. Sorry. That the actual official statistics counting the number of confirmed cases were between 50 and 85 fold undercounted.
So that would mean that there were 50 times as many actual cases. So, for example, in Maricopa County, the newest sort of testing data is suggesting that we've got about a 10 to 20% testing positive rate. Well, if that's true across just Maricopa County, that would mean, let's take the conservative number, that there are 440,000 people who have been infected. And yet, how many cases are actually reported, Lewis, for Maricopa County?
For Maricopa County, sorry, give me 1 minute. It is 45,177.
So that would be a tenfold increase.
I'm sorry, that number is 2 days out of date. It's like a little over 53,000.
So 53,000, about a tenfold increase in the number of actual cases out there. We just don't know about 90% of them. Then, if you take the mortality rate, the number of people who've died in Maricopa County, and divide that, the fatality rate drops precipitously. The same is true for the state of Arizona. If 10% of Arizonans have the coronavirus, then instead of the number of cases that we are reporting for our state, which currently is running at about 85,000, there would be something closer to 770,000 cases. Now you take the deaths that we've experienced and put that, divide that by the total real number of cases, and you suddenly realize
we're seeing about flu numbers, in
we're
fact.
Now, we're not sitting here telling you we know for sure. We're begging our state of Arizona to fund a study. It's not all that hard. It's 3,000 Maricopa County residents. It's 3,000 other state residents, and that would tell us how prevalent the spread has been. But some people don't now want to know that number. Why? Because they've been beating the drum to scare us to death. Forget about dying from coronavirus. We're going to die from being shoved into our homes. And all of that means that we have lost trust in our government. So our governor is begging people to take actions that might actually help. Yeah, it's still a little controversial, but in the cost-benefit analysis of things, it doesn't cost you much to wear a mask.
Or wash your hands frequently. These are all fairly common sense things.
Yeah, I'm kind of frightened about the number of people who've never washed their hands before until being told by the governor. Or how about the number of businesses who are now saying, now we're really cleaning the tables. Or airlines, oh, now we're really cleaning the seats. You know, that sense of cleanliness is now gone forever because we've set a new standard. We're actually going to wash stuff. Our restaurant now uses a dishwasher to wash the dishes between settings. The problem then we face is we've had our faith in our government undermined terribly. And for now, we've got a new order. We've got to close our bars with number 6 licenses, but our restaurants with number 12 licenses are okay, even though the bar might be a safer place than the restaurant. Or how about that we've closed our gyms because there's what? Data? Nobody has announced any data that would tell us that health clubs are a vector for this virus. In fact, one of the comorbidities we know of is obesity. So what should be the result of worrying about people being obese? Close the clubs, of course, the one place folks might go to get healthy. So we're going to bring in Brian from Phoenix to talk to us about his grave concerns.
Hey, Hugh, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Say hello to Lewis as well.
Hey, Lewis. Hey, so I just want to call in and kind of share my opinions about the gyms being open, closed. I just think, first of all, like the owner of Mountainside has been saying over and over, the word arbitrary, and that's...
Add in the word capricious, and you're now a lawyer.
Yeah, there you go. I just think it is arbitrary. All the places I can go to today and have been today, I have been in closer contact with them than I have been at the gym lately. I mean, the gym, they are taking every precaution because they're a business and they want to stay open. They've done a great job. They have kids running around all over the place with masks on, gloves on, wiping down equipment. And those people aren't on unemployment, first of all, so that's a good thing. But additionally, I mean, it's just the most clean I've ever seen the gym. And, you know, my second argument is the psychological aspect of people working out. I mean, in times like this where everyone is on edge, you know, hundreds of thousands of Arizonans specifically, they work out to mitigate stress. And I'm a fireman. I've had to deal with all kinds of psychological treatment and stuff like that for the things I've seen. And, you know, I haven't had to go for so long because of my fitness regimen. And now that's taken away and add on top of everything else. And, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, I just don't agree with it. I don't like it. Also, as a fireman going into the hospital, I have not seen any super fit people in the rooms on vents. The physical aspect of it should be obvious, but, you know,
Brian,
anyway, that's my gripe.
I think that's a really astute point. You know, the mental health aspect is exactly where I was going to go with this.
Yeah.
You know, at a time when we've all been forced into our homes, our entire set of routines has been shaken up and disturbed, and we're isolated from one another in what are really profoundly inhumane conditions. Humans are social animals. We need to be near and interact with each other. And when that's taken away, you know, we've seen spikes in alcohol consumption, drug use, and we're not being given healthy alternatives. They're, in fact, actively being taken away from us in the name of better health, which is just utterly unintuitive to me.
We must starve you to death and starve you of social connection and cause you to become an alcoholic, drug addict, suicide victim in order to save you.
But don't you dare go to the gyms, otherwise you might get hurt.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah. Brian, thank you for your service, first of all. What
Absolutely.
Are you seeing out on the street as a firefighter who's supplying a lot of the online, you know, baseline medical services to folks? What kind of calls are you seeing?
To be honest, though, during the initial scare, we were incredibly slow because nobody wanted to go to the hospital. And just maybe 3 weeks ago, people started to feel more comfortable. Things were open up. And everybody, I hate to say it, a lot of people abuse the emergency system. A lot of people. And all those people were just sitting at home, you know, not abusing it. And then when they felt comfortable, they all went in.
Meaning folks who are seeking their baseline health care through the emergency room rather than any kind of expenditure. Yeah.
Whole nother ordeal. But, there was just a blitz. Just we were incredibly busy bringing non-COVID symptoms into the hospital for whatever reason. And, you know, some of my opinion on the spike, you know, is all those people going in, they're testing everyone in the ER, you know, and, you know, they're getting more positive results. And, you know, I think that they're asymptomatic. Do I think there's more people on vents? Yeah, there's a few more people on vents. That's because things opened, but we have to get this economy open. I mean, it's the scare tactic, you know, from what I'm seeing on the ground to what, you know, the news is saying, it's vastly different. Vastly different. Yeah, they're short
Brian,
nurses, but
thank you again for your service. We're grateful for your
Absolutely.
Call. We've got to take a break now, and we'll be back. He's Lewis Hallman. I'm Hugh Hallman. I've forgotten myself. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. I think that's Huey Lewis and the News in honor of Lewis and Hugh Hallman. Would that be the reason that showed up? We have been talking with Brian, who tells us he's a firefighter who's been out on the street seeing what's been going on and what happened during the early stages. Brian, thank you for calling in. Would you mind sort of repeating what your experience was with respect to the early days and what you're seeing now?
I talked about, you know, when they first shut everything down in Arizona and everywhere, our call volume just plummeted. No one was wanting to go to the hospital for any reason, really. And then after everything kind of opened up, everyone that was previously, you know, kind of a frequent flyer to the emergency room via the fire department, they all called, and the call volume went through the roof. And
that wasn't really COVID stuff. That was just the general, usual medical needs.
I had no patients that were having a low-grade fever, weakness, things like that. It was just kind of what we normally, our low acuity calls that we kind of run, you know, between the bigger calls. But there was a lot of them. And when they go to the ER, they're testing, from what I understand, all of the people that come into the ER. And so I kind of believe, you know, that's part of the reason why we're seeing so many numbers, you know, the vast rise in numbers. And honestly, there are more people on ventilators, but we kind of knew that was going to happen, right? Like, we shut everything down so we had time to get the hospitals ready for it, you know? And now the hospitals are ready, and we've got to open things up. Do I mind wearing a mask? Absolutely not, you know? Do I mind, you know, less machines being open at the gym? I don't. But to shut things down again for people's mental health, for the economy, from what I see, it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Brian, thank you for the call, because I think you're pointing out the unintended consequences of locking people in their homes. And we end up with a society that is becoming increasingly dysfunctional. In fact, if you want to know the numbers, it is true that COVID utilization rate of ventilators has gone up over time somewhat. In the last 3 weeks, it's gone up about 5%. It's now at about 27.5% of all ventilators are used by COVID patients, with about 18, almost 19% used by non-COVID, but almost 54% unutilized currently. And that's the reality. I do think it important that you pointed out something Lewis noted earlier, that the explanation that hospitals are now testing and designating more patients as COVID that might have come in for something else is proved up by the fact that while inpatient beds have increased by 3 times, from 700 to just under 2,000.
Just under 3,000.
In fact, the utilization of ICU beds and ventilators has not gone up. It's gone up half that amount.
Yeah.
So that suggests that instead people are being tested who might have come in for knee surgery. They happen to be tested positive for the coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2 and or COVID-19, and they're designated in that bed as well. Is that sort of what you're thinking?
Yeah. I mean, you pretty much summed it up from what I'm seeing, you know. And just kind of, this is anecdotal, okay, so don't, you know, go out and fact check me. But, I mean, me personally, I have seen more people die from, I wouldn't even say pneumonia because that's every day, but I've seen more people die from UTIs, specifically elderly, obviously. But I've literally seen more people die from UTIs than I've seen die from this.
Those are urinary tract infections, right?
Yeah, it's deadly for old people, but it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And no kidding, we do patient follow-up, and, you know, you go to the hospital the next day and they say, hey, this patient, you know, died or whatever.
Most folks don't know that. Brian, I think that's an important one. For the elderly population, that is a real problem, especially as elderly lose their ability to control their flows. We end up with those happening on a regular occasion. I do want to read something that maybe helps underscore what you've been talking about, and that is, here's the executive order. And it actually says, data has shown that community spread continues to grow at an exponential pace. And of course, the data doesn't show that. And is greatest among the demographic 20 to 44-year-olds. Lewis and I have been beating the drum to point out that while it is true, if you take the 25-year span as a demographic, you can compare that to the 10-year spans of people from age 45 to 54 or age 55 to 64. And miraculously, by counting 2.5 times the size group, you'll have a higher number. But more importantly, that actually isn't a very fair thing.
Well, let me actually make the quick point that you can have an exponential function that grows very, very slowly. You can have something like, it's like how compound interest work. If you're growing at, you know, 2% over a period for every period, that is still technically exponential growth, but it tells you very little about the actual phenomenon. In fact, you can have shrinkage that's still an exponential function.
Yeah. So, Brian, thank you for the call. The point I think we want to take off of your experience is that this, you're hearing a firefighter who's being told one thing, and across the broad spectrum, he's seeing that the truth he's experiencing on the ground, on the street, the care he's giving to actual human beings doesn't match what the government is now telling him he has to do, that he can't go to his gym and work out, that he can't do certain activities. You may not like the fact that some people go to bars as their social activity. The reason, as a lawyer, I question what's going on is because one is supposed to have kind of data-driven decisions that match the objective that government's trying to achieve. And if you're trying to achieve a reduction in the spread of the disease, why would you choose to close bars because they have number 6 licenses and not restaurants with number 12 licenses? Who's behind that decision, especially when there are restaurants that are closer packed and serve lots more alcohol than some bars that are number 6 licenses? If the objective is to protect people, why don't you create a standard that says you have to have space for social distancing, no matter what your liquor license is? You have to have space so that people don't bump into one another. You have to make sure your staff is gloved and wearing masks. You have to ask your guests to wear masks from the car to their tables. Now, of course, it's a little goofy when you think about the fact that you got to put the mask back on to go to the restroom, but sitting at the table, you got your mask off. Yes, I get that it's kind of hard to eat with a mask on, but these are the practical problems we can make a little bit of fun of, but I'm not making fun of the fact that I can't see the rational basis other than it is nearly arbitrary and capricious that somebody convinced the governor that we have to close gyms without data that says the people that are showing up in hospitals and getting COVID-19 had gone to a gym.
In fact, we know that most people that go to hospitals are, in fact, older if you look at them as a percentage of the population, right? If you're looking in terms of actual incidence, 20% of elderly people who get COVID-19 go to the hospital, while only about 2.6% of young people aged 20 to 44 do. So it's not very clear to me that the elderly are frequenting our gyms and that is the source of a continuing epidemic. I'd love to be proven wrong and see the actual data set, but we haven't.
We keep asking for it, and we'd love to have somebody from the state supply data that actually backs up the governor's executive order. It would help support our governor so he does not have to be subject to this kind of criticism. We don't need people losing faith in our government and the direction that we need to take. I'm Hugh Hallman. He's Lewis Hallman. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this subject and how our country was founded, the premises on which this nation is based. We'll look forward to talking to you in just a few minutes. Your arrow. Okay, I won't sing along. I have a terrible voice.
Please don't.
I spent a lot of time in Arizona theater, and every time I was in a musical, I had to perform a character part because, well, I can't carry a tune in a bucket. We've been talking about sort of the way in which our government has handled things that has inadvertently, I think, it was not through evil, but inadvertence, that we have lost some faith in our government. And probably the most recent example of that was starting this Monday, having the announcement with just a few hours that all bars had to close, all health clubs had to close, don't go out tubing, among other things. And Veronica, we understand you would like to talk about that subject. You are on the air.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. I do believe that people are buying into fear instead of understanding that we live in the world of bacteria and viruses, which are our friends. If we would put a child in a bubble and protect the child to touch any viruses and germs, this child will die instantly when he comes out of that bubble. We cannot live a life in a bubble with the mask without getting oxygen we need every day instead of CO2 back into our lungs and expect to be healthy. This is just the wrong concept, and it gives the wrong message that we do not have faith, that God created us in his image and we can heal ourselves. I escaped social medicine myself, and I've learned and I've overcome many, many diseases. And then when I discovered Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine, or herbs, the natural way to feel better, that's when I realized my true integral health. And, you know, anybody who thinks that you can have a magic pill and you will feel suddenly better is delusional. They do not understand that this is not how life works. We have to go through certain pain, and sometimes we have viruses and bad stuff around us. But we need to overcome that through a natural process to getting proper nutrition. Most of the doctors today, they're only self-presentative for big pharma. They do not ask you take D, you take A, you take all these vitamins that you need in, especially in this type of virus.
Well, in fact, Veronica, we appreciate the call on the point. My wife, a physician, made sure that our oldest children, Lou is one of them, experienced the outdoors very young. I have a very dear picture of Louis and Eli, just over about 18 months old, sitting in our driveway, which was then dirt, one of them with his rear end in the air, I think it's Lou, with his mouth on the ground, sucking in some dirty water. Here's a physician making sure that her children were exposed to exactly what you're saying, real life, so that they developed their immunity system.
I fell into a lot of cactus when I was a kid, but I suppose I'm stronger for it.
Betsy, we want to talk to you about closing gyms. You're on the air.
Just a random hypothesis. Your program today has been so thought-provoking, and the lack of trust in government. First, they tell us to wear a mask, don't wear a mask, wear a mask. Who knows? Well, I recall the World Health Organization, when this first came out, saying that this disease was transmitted every possible way except from human to human. Human to human contact was not a possibility for the coronavirus to be passed. So we worried about surfaces. People got crazy and Cloroxed and bleached and Lysoled everything. Perhaps that same, not stupidity, but misinformation is floating around, and perhaps that's why they think they can't keep a gym open, is because this artificial idea that it could be contaminated and never be able to be cleaned still prevails. Of course, we all know that WHO went ahead and retracted that and said, well, now the only way it really is transmitted is human to human, and it can only live on surfaces for a finite amount of time. Just a thought. That's it.
Betsy, thank you very much for the call. We're grateful that you've called in. In fact, that's been a lot of the theme here, is that I don't think any of us complains that we'd have government officials telling us when a mistake was made or the information isn't right and we need to adjust our behavior. Our challenge has been that instead of telling us those things, we get obfuscation. We get people trying to cover the tracks.
We get manipulation. We get, you know, browbeaten and harangued and moved into taking actions that we wouldn't ordinarily take when responsible citizens looking to help their community would take those actions anyway, without the loss of trust.
Yes, certain government officials would rather us be treated like sheep so that we behave better. That is not the sort of political philosophy I follow, and it's probably not the political philosophy that most of you listening follow. That's why we're so concerned that we have lost trust in our government. It's essential that this society have trust in its government so that we can all stay together when necessary. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have died being driven by leaders who could bring us together. We want to talk to you a little bit more about that after the hour.
Back to the Seth Liebson Show. I am Lewis Hallman, Managing Director of Insight Analytics. I am joined by brilliant attorney, economist, and former mayor of Tempe, Hugh Hallman, while Seth is getting some much-deserved rest. So we have decided to storm the building and have been running the show today and yesterday, having a blast doing it, for which we are grateful.
We've been talking about the fact that we've lost trust in our government, and I think it's palpable. We've got a governor who is desperately trying to convince us that we need to do certain things that might actually be quite rational now to help slow the spread of a virus so that we don't overwhelm our health systems. That has been the starting and should be the current mode of operation. It does, however, take trust to have people respond to you. We have had, as Americans, great leaders who have helped us marshal our resources and even put our lives on the line to create the liberty that we enjoy today.
That's exactly right. You know, in these times, it feels like rather than being led by those with integrity and a vision of unity, that we're instead being tricked and browbeaten into
herded
into complying with orders. And I think that no president so exemplifies, you know, the real virtues of American leadership so much as Abraham Lincoln.
And in honor of our country's founding, I hope you'll forgive me, but I think it crucially important to think about and hear the words of someone who led us to save the Union. And as some would now be tearing down the statues of even Abraham Lincoln because of their concerns and, frankly, the result of having been pinned up for 90 days and been lied to, and, of course, the death of a human being at government's hands, I'm not one to take the big tar brush and paint every police officer by the actions of a very few, any more than I think it appropriate that anyone take such a brush and paint any part of our humanity because of the actions of a very few. None of us deserve that.
The central notion of American liberty is that we are judged as individuals.
Just as everyone should be judged, we have George Floyd, who lost his life because he was not judged the way we seek to be judged. And a police officer exercising the power of government ended his life inappropriately. We're not here to say protesting about such things is wrong, but there are principles that have created this country. When you go after the founders and delegitimize the founders in an effort to delegitimize the founding, you are then really about delegitimizing the ideals that created this country, the most important of which Lewis just mentioned.
Liberty and individualism.
that every human being's life matters. That's why George Floyd's life matters, and that's why Black Lives Matter. But it also means Blue Lives Matter. Every human being's life matters. That is the principle on which this nation is founded. And we have an American president who said in 1838, at 27 years old, that in the great journal of things happening under the sun, we, the American people, find ourselves in the peaceful possession of the fairest portion of the earth as regards extent of territory, fertility of soil, and salubrity of climate. We find ourselves under the government of a system of political institutions conducing more essentially to the ends of civil and religious liberty than any of which the history of former times tell us. So this is Abraham Lincoln reminding us, reminding the people to whom he was speaking, that we have this amazing opportunity as human beings. He goes on to then talk about the fact that he hopes he's not overstating the case, but he is worried that if I am not now, there is an even now some ill omen amongst us. I mean the increasing disregard for law which pervades the country, the growing disposition to substitute the wild and furious passions in lieu of the sober judgment of courts, and the worse than savage mobs for the executive ministers of justice. Does that sound familiar? Here is a man who is sounding the alarm about the nature of what's happening in our country, that mobs are forming up and removing the rule of law as the essential premise to protect individual lives and the liberty they enjoy. And what does Lincoln tell us? How then and at what point shall we expect the approach of danger? By what means shall we fortify against it? Shall we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us at a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined, with all the treasure of the earth in their military chest, with a Bonaparte for a commander, could not by force take a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if ever reach us, it must spring up from amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must be ourselves its author and finisher. As a nation of free people, we must live through all time or die by suicide. That's what we're facing these days. We have a society that is unique in history, that took the blood of thousands and thousands of Americans to create, and thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands to sustain. And this is not something that is unique to Americans. It is unique to the world. And when I spend time abroad, as I do, I've spent the last almost 30 years working in the former Soviet Union, developing schools to teach American values, not as American values, as human values, that every human being deserves to exist and to live their life to the fullest while respecting others' right to do the same. And here we sit with people now pulling down statues on the guise that the people who they are dishonoring have somehow been white supremacists who tried to take over the world and destroy other human beings, when in fact the likes of some of those have done everything but what they're being accused of. Lewis's favorite is a fellow who...
I actually wouldn't describe it as a favorite. I'm tremendously upset about the incident. It occurred in Madison. There was a statue of Colonel Hans Christian Hegg, who was an abolitionist who fought in the Civil War. He was a colonel who died at the Battle of Chickamauga. And he actually, in Wisconsin, formed the state a militia in the state to fight against slave catchers from slave states who were looking to get escape slaves. And this man, his statue was torn down, and he was decried as a racist. It's just It's too upsetting for me to really describe well.
So here we are on the eve of our independence, and we'd like to remind ourselves and you as you're listening that this is an unusual experiment. It is a very tenuous experiment. There are people around this world who would love to be part of it. As you know, we have lots of folks trying to get into our country legally and illegally because it is so unique. I'm Hugh Hallman. He's Lewis Hallman. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to 960 The Patriot, KKNT. Welcome back to The Seth Leibson Show. I'm Hugh Hallman. He's Lewis Hallman. We're closing out two wonderful days that we need to thank Seth Leibson for. The Hallmans have taken over his studio. We'd created the Hallman Autonomous Zone. Now, of course, we've pivoted to be the Seth Leibson occupied protest area, so that makes us slop. I want to turn it over to Lewis for his closing thoughts.
So I'm still just sort of resonating with the Lyceum address. It's one of the most beautiful pieces of oratory in human history, really. And my real closing thoughts are this. It's that, you know, echoing another great president, Franklin D. Roosevelt, you know, the only thing that we have to fear is fear itself. And sadly, fear is exactly the tool that is being used to manipulate our actions rather than honest, clear, concise advice. We made the case earlier today in the second hour that America, as Lincoln said, is endowed with the greatest patch of land ever in human history. We cannot be undone but by ourselves. And unless we get clear, accountable expertise, we leave ourselves open to our own demise.
I want to thank Seth for allowing us to sit in, especially on the eve of our Independence Day, to remind ourselves at the amazing legacy that we have been left. And it is our obligation to protect it. It is our obligation to hold our elected officials accountable for what is being done to us now and what they'd like us to do into the future. You need to make phone calls. You need to write letters. You need to exercise your First Amendment. And that includes those who protested the Capitol for the closures, those who protested George Floyd's death. For me, I don't have to sit and complain that the folks on the left are out protesting as the cure to COVID-19. Was quite amazing. But the fact is, you've got people on the left and people on the right very unsettled by the leadership we're experiencing today. And I'm just grateful that all those folks are getting out and exercising their First Amendment rights, that helps us remind ourselves and helps us teach our children that we have something that is unique to the world. When I've talked to folks around the world about the United States, they are envious for what we have. And we forget that. We forget that we have been endowed with an amazing opportunity to live our lives in independence and freedom that is not easily won in world history, and it is very easily lost. There are lots of societies that worked diligently to build up and have been crushed.
I want to thank all of you for sticking with us the past 2 days as we've conducted an experiment of our own. Can the Hallmans successfully navigate radio? We also want to thank again Seth Leibson for giving us this great opportunity. And as he would say, God bless.
Class dismissed.